Okay, here's a question, and you could put the answer down on your paper. What comes to mind when you hear of the name Jeroboam? What comes to mind when you hear the name Jeroboam? Now let me refresh our memories, because sometimes we tend to forget all the various kings. But he was the first king of Israel over the northern 10 tribes after Solomon died. Now the Bible mentions his name quite a bit. In fact, you will find that in about 99% of the times where his name is mentioned, they are not complimentary. They speak about the sins of Jeroboam. So today we're going to look at that, what he did, how those sins affected Israel, and as we do, we need to learn from them and to make sure those things don't happen to us. And so the title of the sermon today is Avoid the Sins of Jeroboam. Before we get into the life of Jeroboam and what he did, let's set the stage. Let's begin to look at what Israel was first taught. Now, let's go to Malachi 4 and verse 1. And let's notice this is a prophecy. And this is at the time of the day of the Lord, right prior to it. The day is coming, burning like an oven, and those who do wickedly will be stubble. So we're talking about the day of the Lord when the wicked will be burnt up. In this context, we come to verse 4. We are told, and this is at the time of the end, remember the law of Moses my servant, which I commanded in him Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and the judgments. I'll send you Elijah the prophet before the coming day, great and dreadful day of the Lord. So this is all in the context of before the day of the Lord, end time. And we are told here to remember three things. The law of Moses with the statutes and the judgments. So this is what we're to remember. We're not to forget them. So let's ask the question, what are the things we're not to forget? Well, let's begin with the law. Exodus 20. Exodus 20, and most of us know what Exodus 20 contains. Exodus 20, beginning in verse 1. God spoke these words saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. That's a very important statement that we see. God wants us to remember it was him who brought Israel out of the land of Egypt. I brought you out of the house of bondage. Therefore, the first commandment we find is you shall have no other gods before me. God reminded Israel, I am the God who brought you out. There are no other gods. I brought you out. It's important to remember that. Now what we find then throughout the book, we see that, throughout the chapter, we see that God gave the Ten Commandments. They are his spiritual law. And we find in verse 18, the people witnessed the thunderings and the lightnings and the flashes and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, and the people saw it and trembled and stood afar off. And they said to Moses, you speak with us. We'll hear you. Don't let God speak with us, lest we die. So they didn't want to hear from God anymore. They heard the Ten Commandments. We don't want to hear that. Moses, you speak to us. It's better. We don't have to worry about us dying. Total lack of faith here. Verse 20. So Moses said to the people, don't fear, for God has come to test you, that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin. The people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. Okay. So what we find then is that Moses went and talked with God, and then he brought those words from God to Israel. So what we find then is chapter 21, chapter 22, and chapter 23, they contain the judgments and the statutes, all given at that time. The law, the statutes, the judgments given during that time. Notice chapter 23, Exodus 23, verse 12. 6 days you shall work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, you and your ox and donkey and the son of your female servant. So even the animals were supposed to rest. And in all that I have said to you, be circumspect and make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth. Again, the emphasis is on keeping the Sabbath, making sure you don't commit idolatry. And then, in verse 14, this is before Leviticus 23. This was during the time of Mount Sinai, when they first came there to hear the Ten Commandments. God tells Moses, 3 times in a year you shall keep a feast to me. And he goes through what those 3 times were, which we know were these pilgrim feasts where people would go to keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Then later, verse 16, the Feast of Harvest. And at the end of verse 16, the Feast of Ingathering at the end of the year when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. So offerings were to be given also, as we see in verse 17, not to appear before the Lord your God empty. That was all part of this package. And God tells all people at the time of the end, don't forget the law of Moses with the statutes and judgments. In other words, don't forget the holy days. We can include that here because that's where they're found. All right, now let's see what the people did. Chapter 24, verse 3. So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. And all the people answered with one voice, saying, all the words which the Lord has said, we will do. We will do them. We will follow through. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. And so he wrote them down. And then in verse 7, he took the book of the covenant, read in the hearing of their people, and they said, all that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient. This was an agreement and a covenant they made with God. God knew Israel, though. He knew their inclination. Let's go to Deuteronomy 31. This is before they went into the promised land 40 years later. After most of those who had gone in earlier into the wilderness had died because they basically had rejected God. They didn't believe God would bring them into the promised land. So you have all these people here who are under age 40. And we're seeing what God tells them through Moses. Verse 16, Deuteronomy 31, verse 16, behold, you will rest with your fathers. This people will rise and play the harlot with the gods of the foreigners of the land that they'll go to be among them. They'll forsake me and break my covenant, which I've made with them. So he's saying, all of you people here, your fathers, they all died in the wilderness because they disobeyed me. But you're going to disobey me as well. You're not going to follow me. You're going to forsake and you're going to break my covenant. And my anger will be aroused against them in that day, and I'll forsake them, and I'll hide my face from them, and be devoured, and many evils and troubles will befall them, so that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us because of our God not among us? And I'll surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil which they had done, and that they've turned to other gods. Remember, I am the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. You will turn to other gods. That was the history. He knew they would disobey. Let's look at verse 21, the last part of verse 21. I know the inclination of their behavior, even before I brought them into the land which I swore to give to them. He knew their inclination would be to disobey. And then verse 7, we find, or verse 27 rather, verse 27, Moses also knew. I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. If today while I am with you, yet you've been rebellious against the Lord, then how much more after my death? All right, that sets the stage for what we begin to read in 2 Kings 17. Let's look at 2 Kings 17. It should come as no surprise when we see that Israel went into captivity because they were going to disobey. They could have repented. They could have been staying close to God, but they didn't. 2 Kings 17, verse 6. The ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away to Assyria, and placed them in Halah and by Habor, the river Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. For so it was, the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, who had brought them up out of the land of Egypt. Again, notice that they sinned against God, the Lord their God, who brought them out of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and they feared other gods. And they walked in the statutes of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel, the kings of Israel that they had made. They forsook him as God. They feared other gods. And they kept the laws of these nations that they had gone in and didn't follow God's laws. Notice verse 20. Verse 20. The Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel, afflicted them, and delivered them into the hand of the plunderers until he had cast them from his sight. For he tore Israel from the house of David. They made Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, king. Jeroboam drove Israel from following the Lord and made them commit a great sin. One of the reasons they went into captivity is because they followed Jeroboam's sin. A great sin. And it was a sin that included a number of sins, as we find in verse 22. The children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did, and they did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight. The sins of Jeroboam. What did he do? What was the one sin that consisted of so many other different sins? What was it that he did? A lesson that we could learn. Remember, as it says here, he made them commit a great sin. It wasn't out of weakness. It wasn't out of being, you know, not able to understand the truth as well as he should have. He did it on purpose. He did it on purpose. It was deliberate. Now, we don't see that at the beginning of his life. We see something unusual. Now, we'll be coming back to 2 Kings. You might want to put a marker there, but let's begin to look at the story in 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 11. 1 Kings chapter 11. And let's look at verse 14. 1 Kings 11 verse 14. Now this is after the time Solomon had rejected God and set up all these other gods and worshiped them, and he turned from the Lord God. And so God raised up some adversaries against Solomon. We find the first one listed here in verse 14. He raised up Hadad the Edomite as an adversary. And then you look at verse 23, and you see that God raised up another adversary against Solomon, Rezon the son of Eliada. So he was an adversary of Solomon. But there's another one who was an adversary, and we pick that story up in verse 26. Solomon's servant, Jeroboam was a servant of Solomon. He was a very well-liked servant. He was a trusted servant. The Ephraimite, of course, from Ephraim, and not of Judah. He was not of Levi. He was an Ephraimite. He was from Zeredah. His mother's name was Zeruah, and a widow, and rebelled against the king. Now, why would he rebel against the king? He was a servant of Solomon. Why would he rebel? Well, we begin to see the story. This is what caused him to rebel against the king. We see the cause of the rebellion. Solomon had built the Milo and repaired the damages to the city of David, his father. So he was a builder. He was fortifying these structures. Solomon did. And Solomon was able to see a very industrial man who could do very good work. And we find the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor. Verse 28, Solomon, seeing that the young man was very industrious, made him an officer over all the labor force of the house of Joseph, over all the tribes of the tribes, which would be Ephraim and Manasseh, and they were the major tribes of the north. He was a man of valor. He was industrious. He did a lot of the work. He was over that labor force, kind of like the foreman. And he was a servant of Solomon. And Solomon trusted him. A very good leader. Something happened to Jeroboam. Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem. It happened at a time. And there was a prophet that met him. The prophet's name was Ahijah the Shilonite. And you see that in verse 29. And Ahijah had clothed himself with a new garment, and the two were alone in a field. So here you have the prophet of God now talking to Jeroboam. Ahijah took hold of the new garment that was on him and tore it into 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, "You take 10 pieces. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel." Notice the emphasis. "The Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to you." You're going to have 10 tribes. Now think of this promise. Think of this prophecy. Being chosen by God through a prophet, being told you will have 10 of the tribes of Israel. You'll be king. And this is a parenthetical statement in verse 32. Why is this happening? Well, as we'll see. But first of all, this parenthetical statement, he, referring to the house of David, will have one tribe for the sake of my servant David, for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel. I'm going to keep Judah. Benjamin went with Judah. Levi basically went with Judah. But I'm still going to keep Jerusalem. God is saying that. Notice, though, why he's doing this. Because they, it's all of the Israelites, they had forsaken me. They worshipped Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the people of Ammon. So the gods of the Sidonites, Moabites, and Ammonites were being worshipped. They've not walked in my ways to do what is right in my eyes, my statutes, my judgments, as his father David did. They rejected his laws, his statutes, and his judgments. However, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, because I made him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of my servant David, whom I chose because he kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand and give it to you 10 tribes. To his son I'll give one tribe, that my servant David will always have a lamp before me in Jerusalem, the city that I've chosen. So I will, verse 37, I will take you. You will reign over all your heart desires, and you shall be king over Israel. What a promise. But not only that, look what else. It shall be, if you heed all that I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight and keep my statutes and my judgments as my servant David did, then I will build with you, or be with you rather. I'll be with you. And I will build for you an enduring house as I built for David and will give Israel to you. What an absolute, unbelievable promise that he was being offered. Because God just said, I will make David this enduring house and I'm going to keep Jerusalem for David's sake. He had an enduring house. I will do the same for you. I will do the same for you. Just remember who I am and obey my statutes and judgments. What an offer. I can't think of anyone else who had such a great offer like that. There's a few others that had great promises, but this is incredible that he would have an enduring house over the 10 tribes of Israel. Verse 40, Solomon therefore sought to kill Jeroboam. Apparently Solomon must have found out about this. In Solomon's mind, he became an adversary because God had chosen Jeroboam to lead those 10 tribes. So Jeroboam had to flee for his life, and he did. He arose and fled to Egypt, to Shishak, king of Egypt. He was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. Now, we won't go into the whole story, but after Solomon died, Rehoboam came to power. The northern tribes of Israel called Jeroboam back from the land of Egypt. And so they asked him basically, you be our king. So Jeroboam was the spokesman for the northern tribes as they met with the king of Judah, Rehoboam. So they met, and Rehoboam said, well, come back in 3 days and I'll give you an answer to your questions. So we come to 1 Kings 12, verse 12. Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day as the king had directed. Come back to me the third day. And the king answered the people roughly and rejected the advice of the elders that had been given him. The advice of the elders was treat the people kindly. I mean, made a lot of friends there that day. Not really. The only thing is, we always have to remember this. The king did not listen to the people, for the turn of events was from the Lord. God orchestrated this scenario that Rehoboam would not listen to the older people because it was God's intent to give Jeroboam the 10 tribes. As it says, the events were from the Lord that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. So when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king saying, what share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to your own house, O David. So now you have two nations. You have Judah reigned over by the son of David, Rehoboam. And now you have Jeroboam ruling over the nations of the north, the 10 nations, and he was an Ephraimite. And this was all designed by God. And it would have gone well. Even the first thing you see about what Rehoboam did was in verse 25. Nothing wrong with what Jeroboam did. Nothing what he did was wrong. It said verse 25, Jeroboam built Shechem in the mountains of Ephraim and dwelt there. Now Shechem is where Rehoboam had come up to meet Jeroboam. You see that in verse 1. So now what Jeroboam did was rebuild and fortify the city of Shechem, and that became the capital for Israel under Jeroboam. But he also did something else. It says he also went up from there and built Penuel. Penuel. Remember Penuel? We won't go there, but it's a story that you can find in Judges 8, that the inhabitants of Penuel did not follow Gideon to go after the Moabites. So Gideon destroyed the tower in Penuel. And so apparently it looks like Jeroboam rebuilt that city and had fortified that city. So far, okay. Something happened. He began to think. And his thinking went way off. Verse 26. Jeroboam said in his heart, "Now the kingdom may return to the house of David." Now wait a minute. What did God tell him? "I'm giving you the 10 tribes. I'm going to make an enduring house for you." In his heart, he said, "I think they're going to go back home. I think they're going to go back and follow King David." Also, if these people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, the heart of this people will turn back to their Lord Rehoboam, king of Judah. They'll kill me and go back to Rehoboam, king of Judah. So he had really no faith in God. So he began to plan. He began to connive, and it was deliberate. Therefore, the king asked advice, and whoever gave him this advice was really off base. You gotta always remember, who do you ask advice from? Don't seek the advice from someone who says, "Hey, forget the Sabbath, forget the holy days." Notice the advice that he took. He made 2 calves of gold and said to the people, "It's too much for you, go to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt." Now notice a couple things here. He goes directly back to the idolatry of Egypt. He does not say, "Here are your gods from the Sidonites, the Moabites, and the Ammonites that Solomon had worshipped." He said, "These are your gods." Now, what did we read back in Exodus 20? "I am the Lord your God that brought you out of the land of Egypt." Oh, no. No. "These are your gods who brought you out of the land of Egypt." And he set one of the calves in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. Now, this is unbelievable as well. He put one way up in the north for people to go to, but he put another in Bethel. Bethel means house of God. That's the place where Jacob had his dream and built this altar there and called it Bethel, house of God. What was the house of God at that time? It was God in Jerusalem, and people would have to go down through Bethel to get to Jerusalem. But now Jeroboam says, "Here's your God. This is the house of God. You don't have to go down to Jerusalem." He says, and this became a sin. This thing became a sin. People went to worship before the one as far as Dan. He made shrines in the high places and made priests from every class of people who are not of the sons of Levi. So he said, "You don't want to go down to Jerusalem." So people would go a little bit further up to Dan, and then they stopped at Bethel. They didn't go down into Jerusalem. Just an amazing type of a diabolical change of beliefs. Went right back. No one said, "Wait a minute, remember what happened to the golden calf after they came out of Egypt?" No one ever. Where were people? saying we shouldn't do this. We can't do this. How can you do this? Well, he did something else that you would think, what in the world was he thinking? He made shrines in the high place, made priests from every class of people who are not of the sons of Levi. Who did God choose to be the priests? The family of Levi. The family of Aaron were to be the high priests. Now he chose anybody. They could have been from Zebulun. They could have been from Issachar. They could have been from Gad. They could have been from Dan. Anyone could be a priest. He wasn't following anything of God. Now, there's something else that he did. Verse 32. So he made these false gods. He then made these priests who were not of Levi. And then he ordained. He ordained. He instituted. Now, God is the only one that can institute and ordain holy days. He instituted a feast on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the feast that was in Judah, and offered sacrifices on the altar. So he did at Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And at Bethel, he installed the priests of the high places which he had made. He had made offerings on the altar which he had made on Bethel, at Bethel, on the 15th day of the 8th month, in the month that he had devised in his own heart. And he ordained a feast for the children of Israel and offered sacrifices on the altar and burnt incense. He ordained it. He devised it. It was not holy. It was not holy time. Only God can determine when holy time is. He devised a whole new feast. Oh, you don't have to keep the feast in Jerusalem on the 7th month. Let's make it a little later. Let's make it on the 8th month. And here we'll do something different. We'll go and worship these gods. Here's a golden calf up here. Here's one here. And, you know, it makes it much easier for you. You don't have to always go down to Jerusalem. It became a sin. Later, we see a prophecy that the prophet Ahijah, another prophet, tells Jeroboam's wife. And this is in 1 Kings 14. See, Jeroboam's son was dying. And so his wife went to talk to the prophet Ahijah. And we pick up the story in 1 Kings 14, verse 7. Go to Jeroboam. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, because I exalt you, or go tell Jeroboam, I exalted you from among the people. I made you ruler over my people Israel. I tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you. Yet you've not been as my servant David, who kept my commandments, who followed me with all of his heart to do what was right in my eyes. You've done more evil than all who were before you. You've gone and made yourself other gods and molded images to provoke me to anger and have cast me behind your back. Therefore, behold, I will bring disaster on the house of Jeroboam. I will cut off from Jeroboam every male. And then we find out that his son did die through the prophecy that had been given. Disaster would come upon the house, as we find in verse 16. He will give Israel up because of the sins of Jeroboam, who sinned and made Israel sin. So you have all these sins combined into one sin. He made Israel sin. And of course, when his wife came into the house, his son died. And we see that later he did die. And verse 20, he reigned for 22 years. Is that the end? Was that the end of Jeroboam? Well, yeah, but he died. But as prophecies were being fulfilled, and we see God choosing other kings along the line, you find incredible statements time after time after time. Let's begin to see these statements. 1 Kings 15. 1 Kings 15, verse 29. Baasha. Baasha was set up as a king, and it was when he became king, he killed all the house of Jeroboam. He did not leave to Jeroboam anyone who breathed until he had destroyed him, according to the word of the Lord which he had spoken by his servant Ahijah, the Shilonite. because of the sins of Jeroboam, which he had sinned and by which he had made Israel sin, because of his provocation, which he had provoked the Lord God to anger. So Baasha killed the sons of Jeroboam, all those who were left. Now, what did Baasha do? What do you think Baasha did? Verse 34. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he walked in the way of Jeroboam and in his sin by which he made Israel to sin. And we find this as a refrain, verse after verse after verse. We know when God repeats something, he repeats it for emphasis. Baasha followed the sin, the way of Jeroboam. All right, let's continue. Let's continue in 1 Kings 16. And, you know, many people say, well, Ahab did even worse. Well, let's look. 1 Kings 16, verse 30. Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all those who were before him. It came to pass as though it had been a trivial thing. As though it had been trivial, he walked in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, but he did even worse. He married Jezebel and went and served Baal and worshiped Baal. Not only the golden calves, but worshiped Baal as well and took to himself a wife out of the tribe, out of the kingdom of the Sidonians. Let's go on. Let's look at these verses in 2 Kings. They're all pretty well lined up here in 2 Kings 13 and 2 Kings 15. 2 Kings 13, verse 2. Jehoiaz, the son of Jehu, became king over Samaria. Verse 2. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. He followed the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. He did not depart from them. Notice verse 6. Nevertheless, they did not depart from the sins of the house of Jeroboam, who made Israel sin, but walked in them, and the wooden image also remained in Samaria. Look at verse 11. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin, but walked in them. All about what Joash did. Then notice these instances in chapter 15, 2 Kings 15, verse 2. We're talking about Azariah. He was 16 years old. He became king. He reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. And he did what was right in the sight of his father. Now that's Azariah, that's the king of Judah. But let's look further during that time in verse 8. Well, let's start in verse 9, referring to after his reign, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reigned over Israel and Samaria 6 months. And that was another Jeroboam. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, as his fathers had done. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the sons of Nebat, who sinned. Then you go down to verse 18. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart all of his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Israel, who made Israel to sin. That was Mahanaim. And then you go to verse 24. In the 15th year of Azariah, Pekahiah, son of Menahem, became king. Verse 24, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. Verse 28, talking about Pekah, the son of Remaliah. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin. All these kings of Israel followed what Jeroboam had done. You don't find one righteous king in Israel. You find more of the righteous kings in Judah, but not in Israel. They didn't change. They didn't change. And then you come to 2 Kings 17, which we read earlier, and they went into captivity because they followed idolatry and followed the sins of Jeroboam. The point is, you and I need to learn from this, that first of all, we always got to remember God is God and there is no other God. There's coming a time in the future when the great beast power will rise and he will say he is God. We have to know who really God is. The world is going to be deceived by the beast, and the false prophet is going to tell people to worship the beast. So we've got to know. And we can never, ever mess around with God's holy days. We can never let that happen to us. And that's why year after year, season after season, we turn to Leviticus 23. We do this every year. We do this before the spring holy days. We do it before Pentecost. We're doing it now before the seventh month. We are told to remember the holy days and to keep them. Leviticus 23, verse 1 and 2. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and said, these are the feasts of the Lord. You shall proclaim to be my holy convocations. They are my feasts." My feasts. These are God's feasts, that they were to be proclaimed by Moses. They were to be holy convocations. And so a proclaiming was to be done first. Now, proclaiming here, the word from the Brown Driver Briggs lexicon means to cry aloud, to read aloud, to call out loudly, to summon, to even publish. And that's what we do. Church does that, publishes it, and we announce it. And it'd be done every year for God's people to attend his feast, God's feast. These are the feasts of the Lord. They're not Jewish feasts. They're not Israel's feasts. These are God's feasts. They belong to God, the great God who brought Israel out of Egypt. And a convocation means a meeting or a gathering together, an assembling together, an appointed assembly. And only God can make those days holy. You cannot take a feast of God and say, oh, we're going to make it over here. We're going to move it over to this month. Or we're going to move it to this day. Oh, no. We do not mess around with God's holy days when they are appointed. So let's notice these last four holy days that we will be observing once again. Leviticus 23, verse 23. Leviticus 23, verse 23. The Lord said to Moses, speaking to the children of Israel, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial, a blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. All right? That's what we'll be doing too. A memorial of blowing of trumpets. It's the first day of the seventh month, the first day of the Hebrew calendar. This year falls on Monday, September 30th. The Hebrew calendar, actually the first month is in Abib, but the Jews count the first day of the seventh month as the first day of their civil year. Their civil year is different than the beginning of the holy year. They call it Rosh Hashanah, meaning the head of the year. And this day, though, to us represents the time Jesus Christ will return, and we will be keeping it. As I mentioned, we will be keeping it. Rolla will be coming up, and we'll be keeping it the Holiday Inn South County. Verse 26, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, the tenth day of the seventh month shall be the day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation to you. It shall afflict your souls. So this is the day of atonement, a day of fasting. That day is the 10th day of the 7th month. It falls this year on Wednesday, October 9th. We will be meeting at the Holiday Inn Earth City. Services at 2:15. The Jews call this day Yom Kippur, the day of reconciling. And they don't understand that what God does in reconciling, that reconciliation comes through Jesus Christ. The only way you can be reconciled to God is through the acceptance of Jesus Christ. And we see that we realize that the whole world will be reconciled to God through Jesus Christ. And one other aspect will take place, and that is Satan will be gone. He will be removed. Then we come to verse 33. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, did they speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month. Not the eighth month, The seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord. The first day shall be a holy convocation. The Feast of Tabernacles, the Jews call this festival the Sukkoth, meaning booths. We dwell in temporary dwellings for 7 days. Pictures the coming millennium when the whole world will be at peace and will be able to rejoice in the ways of God. We will be keeping it beginning the evening of the first holy day. It begins Sunday night, October 13th through Sunday, October 20th, 7 days. I know in Branson they don't have a service on the night before. Most other feast sites will have a service on that Sunday night, but the actual holy day begins, the holy day is on the 14th. That's Monday the 14th. The first day, but it begins Sunday evening, the 13th. It would be good, if at all possible, to attend services that first night, if it's available in that particular feast site. Then we come to what we saw earlier in Haggai. On the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep the feast of the Lord 7 days. The first day there'll be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day, a Sabbath rest. And that's what it was called. The eighth day, the Jews call it the convocation of the eighth day. One Jewish lady wrote saying she was really surprised that I was surprised your church believes in that. Very few people believe in that. They don't even know what it means. And we could get in then discuss a little bit what that day pictures. We understand it's the last day of salvation for all people. That's it. God's giving people who've never had their opportunity, that last opportunity to have salvation offered to them. It's a great day of the great white throne judgment. So that occurs on Monday, October 21st. And those are the feasts of God as they conclude for the year. Notice verse 41. You shall keep it as a feast to the Lord your God 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths. And then we see in verse 44, Moses declared to the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. God never intended for this statute ever to be broken. When Jeroboam rejected these holy days and instituted his own, it is called a great sin because it included idolatry, it included rejecting the Levites, and he changed. He rejected God's holy days. We can't forget that these holy days are of God. There are prophecies of the beast setting up times and seasons. What is he going to do? What is he going to do to deceive the world? We can never be deceived. These are the holy days. When they occur, we must keep them. Finally, in conclusion, let's notice Deuteronomy 14. Deuteronomy 14, and let's start in verse 22. Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place that he chooses to make his name abide there. The tithe of your grain and new wine and oil and the firstborn of your herds and flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. So we go to the feast to learn to fear God. We actually go to all the holy days so we can learn to fear God even more. And then finally in verse 26, spend your money for whatever your heart desires, oxen, sheep, wine, similar drink, whatever your heart desires, you shall eat there before the Lord your God. You shall rejoice, you and your household. So we go to learn to fear God, and we go to rejoice in the many blessings of God. So once again, this year, let's keep the feasts of the Lord and not follow the sins of Jeroboam.